Hi, this is James Maroney from First Choice College Placement and Online College Planning, and we're here on the University of New Haven campus recording our first episode of the First Choice College Tips podcast. I'm here with Kevin Phillips, the Associate Vice President for Enrollment Management at the University of New Haven, and Kevin has agreed to talk with us for a little while and give us some tips, tell us some more about the University of New Haven. Kevin, thanks for agreeing to be on this podcast.
Sure, James. Thank you.
Now, I want to start by asking you, one of the most common questions I get from parents is that, what do colleges look at? Do they look at the weighted or an unweighted GPA? And I know I'm going to throw something extra in here in that I know all high schools have completely different GPA scales, and you're dealing with students from all over the country. So how do you deal with that?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing I can say is that all of the colleges do things a little bit differently, but generally speaking, a vast majority of them are going to probably look at the weighted GPA in some way, shape, or form. For example, here at the University of New Haven, if a kid's in an honors program or taking AP courses, obviously that's going to carry some weight. So we're looking for kids that are challenging themselves. Some colleges will actually recalculate the GPAs to reflect their 4.0 scale if the college in particular is not actually doing that. So I think it does vary a little bit. Over the years that I've been doing it, I've seen a vast change in how the high schools do it. Some of the high schools that traditionally were on a normal 4.0 scale have changed it to a 7-point scale, and they list different GPAs. So it's a little more challenging for the colleges occasionally. I think that the people that you're working with probably don't realize how many differences there are in the transcripts that we see. But generally speaking, as a rule of thumb, the vast majority of colleges are probably going to not penalize a student at all for challenging themselves. So we're going to mostly look at the weighted GPAs. In a situation where it's really a big differential, we may recalculate the GPA. We're just trying not to penalize the student, but we also want to make sure the student's prepared for college level work.
Okay, great. Now, are you looking, it sounds like then you do look at the strength of the curriculum if the student is involved.
Yeah, we do. And my previous institution that I had worked at before the University of Haven, we did as well. So in our review system, we have an academic rigor component. And this is behind the scenes, but we rate it 1 through 5, with 5 being the most challenging. And to get a 5, you're probably taking a decent number of AP or IB courses or college level courses. A 4 is a vast majority of honors and a combination. 3 is the normal college prep, et cetera. So we find that that's really helpful. And in particular here at the University of Haven, I mean, over the years, I mean, our average GPA has gone up tremendously. So it is harder to get in here now than it was 10, 15 years ago. So we are looking at GPA. We're looking at weighted GPAs. We're looking at rigor. We're looking at the types of courses the student took when we make the admission decision.
Now, beyond those factors, where did you look at how did test scores figure in, and then also looking at the activities?
I mean, we're looking at the overall picture, and we do require an SAT or an ACT score. I know there's a lot of schools out there that have gone the test optional route. We are not going to do that. We still find there's a lot of value. It's the one test that puts everybody on the same plane. There's debates that go on, but we've seen students, you know, sometimes they don't test all that well, but that doesn't mean we may not admit them. Even some of those test optional schools will still give more scholarship dollars out to the students that are doing well on the test. So a majority of the schools that do decide to do it, there's two trains of thought in there. One is a school that might be struggling in its enrollment may think they'll get more applications. And then some of the very good schools are saying, hey, that's not the only thing that we're going to look at. So you don't necessarily need to do that, but you may need to submit additional documentation, an essay, SAT-2, something like that. So I saw the term test flexible is what some of them are.
NYU, I believe, is test flexible.
Yeah. So we're just making this easy. We require it. And one other reason that we require it is something a lot of people don't really look at. We're focused on the outcomes here. And many of our majors, you know, if you're going to go on to be successful, you have to take tests in a lot of these areas. So I'll give you just a couple of examples. To be professionally licensed as an engineer, you have to take a test. To be a nationally registered dental hygienist, you have to pass a test. If you want to be a chartered financial analyst, you have to pass a test. If you want to go to law school or med school or dental school, you have to pass a test. So we understand that there's differences in how people test. So we won't just automatically deny somebody that has a lower score, but we are going to look at that score. We will look at activities. Obviously, we want students here that are involved in things. We won't necessarily deny somebody who has no activities if they're academically qualified. But it will help students that, you know, maybe we're on the fence on whether we're going to admit them. And there's all kinds of things that we'll look at. If someone's in an honor society or someone's providing community service, we've even had scholarships here for people that are leaders in the community. And they're not large scholarships, but they always supplement, you know, the academic award or the regular financial aid package. We do read the essay. It is a component. So as a member of the common application, we're supposed to be providing a holistic review, and we do. So we will read the essays, and just similar to that rigor, we assign a rating of a 1 through a 7. Obviously, the counselor, the admission counselor who's reviewing the files, the way we do it, the counselor reviews the majority of his or her applications from a particular geographic region. We go to a committee when there's a question on whether the student should be admitted, if we want to go to bat for someone that's on the fence, or if you want to give a scholarship to somebody that maybe didn't normally qualify for that. So, I mean, that's, we're looking at everything, and that's kind of how we do it here at the University of New Haven.
So that, I have a few follow-up questions now. One, you mentioned a lot of great majors, and I think later on in the podcast we're going to talk about the programs, especially new programs at the University of New Haven. But we're focused on the admissions part now. So do you accept students based on the strength of the major? So is there a different admissions criteria for the different majors?
Yes, that's a really good question. And here the answer is yes. There are some schools that just admit the students to the university and then eventually let them declare or pick a major. You can do that here at the University of New Haven if you want. You can come in as an undeclared major and explore options and pick a major after your first year. But students can also select a major to apply to, and a vast majority of them do. Sometimes they can switch that major, but some of them have very specific criteria, and some you can't even switch into. So I'll give you one example of that. Our forensic science major is arguably one of the best ones out there, very rigorous. And because it's so popular, we never have room in it. So students sometimes come in and think it's really difficult, or maybe they don't want to be a scientist, and they can switch out of it. But we have enough people in the program, limited lab space, that we just can't keep taking people into the program. So it is an independently accredited program. So we do have to have some very consistent academic reviews on it. And it is tougher to get into that major and a host of other ones, our engineering programs, dental hygiene, things like that. Across the board will have slightly higher and sometimes significantly higher admission criteria than the regular major. Not that the regular majors are not rigorous, but they just don't have maybe as many people applying to them. And so it creates a little competition. Overall, over the years, we've accepted between 50 and 75% of our applicants, depending on the year. But forensic science, it's more like a 30 to 35% accept rate. So they're getting enough people applying. It's a supply and a demand thing for the colleges, and that's why you see, some of the very best schools out there, like the Yales and the Harvards, with 5 and 4% accept rates. They just have so many kids applying, so limited space. So some colleges are in that boat. Some need more students. So it just depends on what you're looking at. But I would say to anybody who's listening too, all the colleges that are open are good colleges for someone. So you have to find that right fit, the connection with the people, the majors, what you're looking for. And when you do, just go through the process. We will talk to students that don't meet our admission criteria to give them some alternate options of what they can do to eventually get here, maybe transferring in, for example, stuff like that.
It really sounds like you're doing some counseling with the students. So would your advice to them be then that they get to you early?
I think so. I mean, I've been doing this now, believe it or not, 24 years, and in particular 17 here at the University of New Haven. And the one thing, we have two types of students and parents. I mean, the ones that are up front and they're visiting during their sophomore and their junior year and they're just getting all their ducks in a row. And then there's people that aren't thinking about it. And then they wake up and they're halfway through their senior year and they haven't even visited a campus. Not that they can't do it, but I find those people are rushing and they have less time to make a well-informed decision and whether that's the right fit, whether they connect the most with the faculty on that campus, whether it's a financial concern, whatever it is. So the earlier you get out there, we find that more and more students wait till they get accepted now before they visit. I personally wouldn't do that. I think that they should visit the campuses that so they can maybe shorten their list down a little bit. I know one person that applied to about 20-something schools. That's too many, in my opinion. you know, things just get off. Yeah, they just then they start confusing them. I met one family last year that they visited four colleges on the same day, and we unfortunately were the last one of the day. So by the time they got here, they were basically fried. They don't remember anything that we said to them. So that's another thing. I would limit it to one a day if possible. I think sometimes going two a day is tough. But I think getting out there and seeing which colleges you like, making that list, decide which ones you're going to apply to, then go back again to see it when you're really making that decision.
So we've just spent a little bit of time talking about the college visit. One thing that I write about frequently is demonstrated interest. And I was wondering, does the University of New Haven track demonstrated interest? And do you have any advice for students on showing demonstrated interest?
Yeah, I mean, we actually don't make any special clauses for people like that. We will look at it, though, because it's going to be an indicator of their likelihood to enroll. But if they're meeting the admission criteria, we're going to admit them. And then, obviously, we do a little bit of recruiting here still. We try to contact our applicants, and if they haven't been here, we try to get them to come up here, and we talk a little bit about the major, why they would want to consider coming to the University of New Haven. I think schools that are struggling a little bit with their enrollment will probably look at that a little bit. But, you know, I think overall most colleges, you know, they're going to look at that data, but as far as being admitted, I think that if they meet the criteria, they meet the criteria. If it comes down to a spot, a school might say, hey, if I don't have a spot, yeah, because that person would be more likely to enroll once they visit. Like, here's a quick example. Our accepted student day program here are for accepted students only, but they're basically open houses for accepted students. So they're not orientations. They're basically for students to decide whether they're going to come. And we usually do them in March and April. So some people call them accepted student open houses. We call them accepted student days. Well, anyway, we had the largest number of students that we've ever had on those days, but we also had the highest yield. So 64% across the board of the students that came on one of those days are actually enrolling in our upcoming class. That's a lot. Visiting campus really makes a difference. So, you know, colleges really want students to come to their school, you know, for various reasons. And, you know, I think that parents and students sometimes don't look at that. The word that people used for years was fit. I think it's more about connection. So, like, you could come onto a campus in the middle of the summer and see a nice building. Like, we're looking out the window right now. We see the Henry C. Lee Institute of Forensic Science. If we go in there, it's got some pretty cool things. There's a forensic technology lab, a crime scene training center, all this stuff. But, you know, you haven't met anybody. You haven't met the faculty. You haven't met students in the program. So I think that, you know, if I was giving people advice, yes, fit's a little important, but also connection with someone on that campus. How are you going to feel as a regular student? And I think some people don't always look into that. So that's what our accepted student day is for. They're going to meet current students. They're going to meet faculty. Obviously, you can go on a tour anytime. But immersing yourself for a day, our personal visit day is called a charger day. You could shadow a student for a day, sit in a class, things like that. And I think that's when you can really picture yourself there. That would be my advice to somebody is don't just go on a tour. And eliminate it from there. If you just drive on a campus and you just don't feel it, it's usually probably right. You know, I think they said the first impression is usually the right one. But we were talking earlier, we have students that sometimes make their decisions based on the weather of the day. I would encourage them not to do that. The school cannot control the weather. If it's pouring rain or snowing or whatever, don't blame the school. So getting a look deeper is what I would encourage people to do.
So we've talked a little bit about demonstrated interest and some of the other factors that go into the admissions decision. But I think it would be very interesting for our listeners to understand, how do you make those admissions decisions? Meaning, do you have a regional representative who's in charge of all of the students within one area? Are you using a committee? Or really, how do you go about making that decision?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I know that there's a lot of differences between colleges. One of our former colleagues who worked here for a while now works at a school down in the Mid-Atlantic region, and she indicated to me that they do committee reviews even on, you know, applicants that, and they're not that selective. That's just how they've been doing it. We have some pretty straightforward standards that we're looking for. Case in point, I mentioned forensic science. Well, you have to have a certain GPA, you have to have a pretty good SAT score. We do read that essay and we look at the letters of recommendation. if a student is right on the fence, that's when we would go to like what we call a committee. So the majority of students are going to get reviewed here by one person, that admission counselor, who is reading the essay, who is interviewing them for admission, things like that. So it's a holistic review process. But if the student is a strong student, if they have like a 4.0, if they've challenged themselves, they have a very high SAT or ACT score, chances are we're going to probably admit them to the majority of our programs. I never like to use the word guarantee because sometimes we have space limitations. So sometimes later in the process, we may not take kids and we might put them on a wait list for forensic science, as an example, engineering, things like that. But for, you know, overall, I think it's just that, you know, we're looking for the best student that we can get in the program. And some of it's pretty straightforward. The committee comes into play. Let's say they're right on the fence. Maybe they've taken those good classes, but we want someone else to take a look at that and make sure. We want to make sure the student is going to be successful here. We have data that even shows some of our very low SAT scores, they don't do well here. There's studies all over the place that you could look into, and they still say the best predictor of success is the GPA and the types of courses. Less people feel that the test score predicts, but I have data that shows that it can. And so sometimes what we've done is, you know, someone's on the border, the SAT is lower than we normally accept, but their GPA is okay. We've given them an opportunity. Many times those students struggle a little bit. And so I think that, you know, when people help people with the test, I think that's a key component out there. Some people just don't like to take the test. But at the end of the day, we can't get to the point where people are using it as an excuse. I know that might be a topic of debate, but at the end of the day, as I mentioned earlier, we have so many people that go on to med school and law school. Well, you're not getting into law school if you're under a 150 on the LSAT, and that's a pretty low score. If you go to Yale, I think their average is 179 out of 180. So you got to really prepare yourself for that. But again, there's schools for everyone, but there's minimum criteria that you have to meet.
Now, have you found that there are certain majors where the SAT is a better predictor of academic success? I believe that in engineering, the math score, it correlates strongly with academic success.
Yeah, that's actually true. And yes, for engineering, and we have 7 different engineering disciplines, we do look at the math score more than the critical reading score. And honestly, sometimes when there's a big gap, but the math is higher, the student really does fine. So it really does depend. And we don't de-emphasize the English component because the core curriculum is important and we redid our core and we take it very seriously. But sometimes it correlates differently, like our music and sound recording major and our fire science major depends on which area they're in. Sometimes the math score really helps them if they're audio engineering or they're fire protection engineering. But if they're just doing straight music or straight music industry or straight fire science, then that score is not as important. So that's when we take those things into consideration for programs. And, you know, I've been here for such a long time. I don't know how many other schools are doing it that way, but it's been very successful for us because we're a good school if you know what you want to do, and also a great school if you don't know, because we have so many majors. And I always told people this, and I think it resonates well with families. It really doesn't matter where you start. It matters where you finish. That's the most important. So even if you come in as that forensic science major, you realize, wow, I'm not a scientist. The good news is you don't have to leave the University of New Haven if you still have that interest in a criminal justice related field. We have all kinds of stuff, national security, fire science, legal studies, paramedicine, criminal justice, all of those choices exist for them.
So you mentioned earlier on that the SAT and ACT become your common measuring stick that put all students on a level playing field. So just how many different areas are you recruiting from?
Yeah, it really is. I mean, with the differences in the high schools, I mean, the curriculums, the GPAs that we mentioned earlier, the weighted versus the unweighted, sometimes we just don't know. You know, there's a topic sometimes that people talk about, you know, is a B at this school really a B at this other school? And it may not be. It may be taught by a different high school teacher. Maybe it's a college level course versus an AP level course, and there's a higher expectations. So yes, and you know, there's that debate, you know, whether it's taking into consideration all of the subject areas or if it's biased in some way, shape or form. But it is a test that everybody can take. And, you know, we don't necessarily penalize somebody for a lower than expected test score. But, you know, some schools have minimum scores, and I think we sort of do in some of those majors. But if someone's within 10 or 20 points and their GPA is fine and their essay is fine, we'll probably be able to put them in. But it's still something that kind of does put the on that level playing field. And you know, I've been to several conferences and talked to several people that are in my shoes at other schools, and sometimes they just start doing things because everyone else is doing it. And I said, if you want to be successful, you got to do something different. So this was the common way to do it from the time I grew up, and it still works for us. I mean, many of our students take the SAT. No one complains about it. Lots of them get nice scholarships because of it. And I think it's just how you approach things that makes a difference.
So on the topic of SATs, do you require the optional essay? And if not, are you using it in any way? Meaning, are you going to use it for placement in a student's freshman English class?
That's a great question. We decided not to require it. So now that, and obviously you had no choice before, but we don't require it. And the question that you asked is, it is taken into consideration. So it can assist with freshman English placement. We use the test score, actually. And so it's a combination of the critical reading score and they do look at the writing section. So, and if someone doesn't take it, they're not going to make them take it, but it is something that can help them. They may then have to take an English placement test. So we have a little bit of both here. Our English department has some policies and procedures. For example, most of our majors, most of our classes would accept a score of 3 or higher on an AP test. English does not. You have to have a 4. So they really want to make sure a student is going to be prepared for that particular class that they're offering. And so it does come into play, but we don't require it.
So you don't require the SAT essay, but do you require the ACT essay?
We do not require it, right? Yeah, we have not done so. We're not going to penalize a student. There was a time where we actually had a writing scholarship for that. Yeah, we're not doing that anymore. but, if someone takes it, we'll take a look at it. It might more play in the admission decision. And like I said, it's more an assistance with placement in a particular English core class. But we don't require it at the moment. Some schools will require it.
So I am curious, with the changes to the SAT in March of 2016, are you seeing more students taking the ACT?
Yes, we have, but the majority of the ones that we get are also taking the SAT. So they're taking it as basically a supplement or a complement to the ACT, to the SAT. I think the further you go away, you'll see more people that just take the ACT, like you mentioned, but definitely more people than before. And I think there's a perception out there that it was easier. I've heard people say that. I wouldn't say that's easier. I know that the SAT, some of the redesign, wanted to take into more holistic approaches and things like that. I think people just debate these things all day long. We just have some data that shows, a certain test score or a certain ACT composite score has predicted some success in our majors, and it helps students with scholarships. So based on our previous data, and that's one thing I learned, the data doesn't lie. So over a 17-year period of time, the student scores, despite the fact that the concordance charts change, it's almost even. Like, here's a great point. They claim that the concordance chart, if you read it, is about a 70-point differential. Our average SAT score is 70 points exactly higher than it was last year. So that means it's the same if the concordance chart's right. So we have the same academic quality. And, that was not going to be a simple thing for colleges to determine how to do that, but we basically used it that way and tried it that way, and it seems to have really worked right to a T.
Since it seems that you are dealing primarily with SAT scores, are you using a concordance chart to convert an ACT score back to an SAT score and then treating it as if it were an SAT score?
Yeah, that's what we've been doing for years. So, we'll take that score and, what composite score it would supposedly equate to. So, yes.
So now I'm going to transition our interview. Your daughter, Chase, is a high school junior. So how has your career in college admissions prepared you for working with your own daughter as she goes out on the college search process? And how have your college visits been?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I always wondered how I was going to handle that when the time came, because essentially since the time I was 23, I've been working for two colleges. And, I've met so many people, thousands and thousands of people. And everybody's different. Some people are nervous. Some people have their ducks in a row. And we'll help anybody. We just find that we had to explain it. But what was interesting is I learned one thing. I want my daughter to pick the college that she's going to go to. I have my opinions. And it's real interesting with her. We visited several schools, and it's funny how things resonate with her. You know, she looks at the marketing pieces. Now, I've tried to figure out if that's because I've worked in colleges and she's seen me doing this for years, but she also did a little test group for me. So here's the advantage for me. She has a group of friends that is kind of like my test group to see if things work. You know, like a few years ago when Snapchat first came out, I read an article that I believe it was Eastern Michigan was using Snapchat, and maybe Michigan too, was using Snapchat in recruitment. And a lot of people around here were like, oh, I don't see how we could do that. Well, anyway, it's our most widely used social media aspect in terms of recruitment. You know, we're doing snap stories on things like our mock disaster drill for our Henry Lee College, or when we go out onto Long Island Sound for our Marine Biology Day. And, you know, we found people will be more interested in the snap stories, which, you know, are quicker than the 6 to 10 seconds that normally Snapchat has. But that helps us a little bit. And I got more of that from my daughter and her friends. It's also something interesting at a college fair. It's interesting. The admission counselors from the other schools have to realize that they're being watched. So if they're not engaged, they might miss a student. And so my daughter and her friends thought that this admission counselor who wasn't like ready for them was busy and didn't want to talk to them. But on the other hand, a school that they weren't looking at, the admission counselor talked to them and said, hey, ladies, how are you? And they went over. So even though we're in this new technical age and social media and everything, there's still no substitute for talking to somebody and learning a little bit about what you're interested in. So the biggest benefit I got is I got to see what other colleges are sending out in email forms, how many are using social media, what type of marketing they're doing. And, you know, it makes us really take a look at. We want to make sure we're sending things that are sent to the appropriate audience without forgetting that the parents are still involved in the process. So that's really two audiences that I think people forget. So the parent is maybe not on Snapchat. So we can't just put something on Snapchat. As a matter of fact, more of our parents are using the Facebook page than the students. We have an app now called Schools App that we use that really is highly utilized by our incoming class, and they'd rather just put something on the app and text people and stuff like that. So things have changed a lot. But I do think the quick summary, or the long summary, is, you know, it's an interesting process, and I just want her to make the decision. There are questions that I would ask, but because she's been paying attention for all these years, she's asking them herself. That might be a rarity out there, but I think that would be some advice I would give. The students should definitely think, what are they looking for? What do they want to know? And they should discuss it with their parents. It shouldn't be one way or the other. It should be a joint decision, in my opinion, because you're investing in time, finances, the future, everything.
Now, how early did you start the college search process with your own daughter?
Yeah, and I think that might be the difference. She didn't have a choice. Sometimes she had to come to open houses with me when she was in sixth grade. So she's been coming to the University of New Haven events since she was probably in sixth grade. And it's one of the reasons why she actually is seriously considering attending the University of New Haven. I didn't push her to do it, but she has it on the top of her list right now after visiting a bunch of schools and getting a bunch of different marketing. There's four other schools that she really thinks that she would go to if she didn't come here. So her list is going to be five schools. She's going to probably apply to five schools and see what happens from there. It's definitely an interesting process. My thing is, I would encourage people, sophomore year is probably the best time to start looking, and if not the junior year. I don't think going too early really makes that much of a difference. Something you're interested in seventh grade may be totally different by the time you're in high school. But just to get an idea of what you're looking for, a sophomore is a good time to do a visit, and if not, definitely during the junior year. I wouldn't wait till the senior year, but a lot of people do. So that's just my opinion based on. So we've seen some schools, and you know, we looked at a couple schools in Connecticut, and that was the only thing. It was a little weird for me to go into another admissions office, and a couple of the people at one of the schools knew who I was. They thought I was there to spy on them. But I said, no, I'm actually here with my daughter. So it's definitely an interesting process.
Yeah, I was wondering if they would see the name and get nervous. Yeah.
The ones that know me, they're probably wondering why.
Now, you've mentioned earlier in our interview that you need to discount weather when visiting colleges. But is there a best time in the year to visit colleges?
I mean, I honestly, it's going to depend on the part of the cycle. So I'll start with, if they're in their senior year, I think the visiting in the fall is very important. And you know, every school has different visits. Even though the open houses are larger events at most colleges, I think they're the most comprehensive visit for someone. Going back a ways, I think the first thing they might want to do, like we have summer visits this year, that's a good time to go and see if you like the campus and learn a little bit about it. But it shouldn't be the decision maker. I think that it's a good stepping stone to a bigger visit. So my personal opinion is if you're a junior or a sophomore, just going on a tour is probably fine. If you can fit it into when school's in session, I would do that because you see the atmosphere. If you can't, it's not a horrible thing to visit in the summer months. Just as long as you know that there isn't going to be a lot of activity on the campus, you know, even though right now, if you come on a weekend, we had a basketball tournament, we had a baseball tournament, AAU tournament, we had a professional development conference for people in a business leadership area. So there were things going on, but it wasn't the regular college atmosphere. But I think after all of the things that I've seen, the open houses really give you a good idea. The one disadvantage of them is they're very large events for any college that runs them. So if you want a personal visit, we have a program called an enhanced visit. Not all schools do. They're major specific visits, and they're usually, you know, 15 or 20 students or fewer with their family. So and they're just focusing on a particular area of study, but they also meet the admission staff, get a campus tour. They get something to eat as part of that program. So you get a little bit of that opportunity to connect. So if schools have those types of visits, I'd recommend those.
Now, have there been any incidents when you were touring a college with your daughter and you thought to yourself, man, this is something that we really need to do back at the University of New Haven?
You know, it's interesting. I was actually hoping for that. And I guess what I learned is we're doing a lot of pretty good things. and a lot of the people noticed it, too. I went to a conference recently where they said, I met a vendor whose son is looking at colleges, and she said to me that ours was the best open house. And I think what we do is we've listened to people. You know, what are you expecting? So, sir, I mentioned to you earlier, quality service is important. College is a huge investment, so we want to make sure that you feel welcome here and you get the information that you do. I get emails all the time about our staff is very friendly and very engaging, and I think that that's the one thing I did learn. Is that not all schools are taking that seriously. And if they're listening to this, they really should. One of the sessions that I went to at a conference recently confirmed what I already knew. If certain schools don't start really, you know, upping their game a little bit, they're going to lose more and more students. You know, it's the way the society is today. I mean, we have to engage the students in things that are interesting to them. Some of our majors are aligned towards 21st century careers and not 20th century careers. Not all colleges have come on board with that. And so that's what we talked about, the fit versus the connection or the combination thereof. I think that's what I want my daughter to understand, that, you know, we're not going to school for 1995 anymore. We're going to school for 2025 and beyond. And that's difficult for a lot of college administrators to really change their game. And I think it depends on the school. I think they have a lot of opportunities to improve what they're doing. But like I mentioned earlier, every college has its forte, and they're all good, and sometimes people look at the rankings too much. I think they got to find the school that's right for them, and they get a college degree, and what's the value of that degree and what they can do with it.
Kevin, that's a very important point, and I think it's worth repeating. It's the fit and the connection are crucial. It's not about finding the best school. It's about finding the best school for that student.
Right, and I think that people underestimate that. You know, there's even a growing trend amongst people that are doing hiring. They don't necessarily care as much as they once did as to what the degree is in, but they're looking at the skill sets that the students have. So I always tell people, find a major that you're passionate about and you do well in it, you're going to be fine. And you're going to open up a lot of doors for yourself. And I think that that's where we get a little confused. Some people, you're going to go to be a pre-med student. Well, you can be pre-med with any major. So really, it doesn't just have to be biology. And I think, you know, that's what a lot of people fail to recognize.
Kevin, that's so true. In fact, my wife is a family medicine doctor, and she's told me the piece of advice that she would give to students considering going on to medical school is to major in something other than pre-med, since for the rest of their life, they're going to be practicing medicine. Now I'd like to pivot one more time at our interview and go to talk about some of the programs that you have at the University of New Haven, especially those programs that you would consider to be hidden gems.
Yeah, that's a really good question. Like you mentioned, we're pretty well known for a lot of different types of majors, but we do have some pretty unique and innovative 21st century degrees. One I would call one of the best ones that a student could get a degree in now is cyber systems. Cyber systems is not a new degree, it's just a reboot of a former degree known as information technology. So it's covering things that are more pertinent to today's market, cybersecurity, cyber forensics. So for example, how do you get digital evidence off of something like a hard drive or an Xbox or an iPad where someone that committed a crime might have left that digital footprint of what they were planning or what they were doing? Data breaches, wireless networking, things like that. And there's some great opportunities down the road for students employment-wise. Next 5 to 10 years, plenty of opportunity to do things.
Thanks, Kevin. That's a great preview of some of your new programs. Do you have any new facilities that will be coming online soon?
Yes. Facility? Yeah, this is, I mean, the centennial of the University of New Haven is going to be in 2020. So if a student is interested in coming, this is the best time because we did a lot of investing in our non-academic facilities for a long time. New resident halls, new recreation center, things like that. Now we're going back to the academic facility. So there's a new innovation center that's going to open, which is focusing on makerspace and design. It's the non-traditional collaborative classrooms that a lot of schools are doing. Yale was the first one in Connecticut. We were the second one. Sacred Heart University is doing it now. So a lot of schools are going that route. But marine sciences, a great program that we've had here. The one thing we were lacking was an on-the-water facility. So this is going to open probably next year. It's like 3/4 done now, right off of Interstate 95 in the Long Wharf area of New Haven, so the New Haven Harbor area. And we have an intro to marine biology class where the students already go out on boats to the Long Island Sound. They go to the West Haven and New Haven Harbors. They go to Mystic Marine Life Aquarium, the Audubon Center in Milford, Coastal Audubon Center. So there's a lot of immersive learning that takes place. Two great things about that is it gives you all the background you need to move on in the degree and be successful. It also can weed you out if it's not for you. So it's almost like a trial. And then it counts as an elective towards any other major. So that's what I alluded to earlier, not where you start, where you finish. So we have majors that get you into the degree right away. Not all colleges do that. And I think there's two benefits that I just alluded to. And then there's other majors that we've done things with. We have genetics and biotechnology now. Genetics at most colleges are at the graduate level. We had a biotechnology major. We just merged it together where they have some great opportunities, research, internships. One student did one at Yale New Haven Hospital where they were injecting tumors into mice and then testing the effects of up to 10 different types of medications on how they treat the tumor. And that's a growing area, a high demand field. A lot of students say pre-med. Medical school's tough. So if you can get other options, you could do pre-med with biotech, but you also have that opportunity to maybe get a job at a biotech firm or something of that sort. So we've got a lot of choices like that. Paramedicine is another new degree that we have. National Security Studies is these are 21st century degrees, so they still give you the core curriculum, which is really, really important, giving you that well-rounded education and your decision-making abilities, but you're learning some technical things that you couldn't have learned 10 or 15 years ago.
Kevin, you just mentioned the core curriculum. Some people may not be familiar with that. Can you talk a little bit more about the core curriculum at the University of New Haven?
Sure. I mean, we think that's really important, and we just did a complete redesign of it. So it is reflecting new learning. So here's an example of that. There's a computer science component. Up until a few years ago, you could take a course called Introduction to Data Processing, and essentially it taught you how to use Microsoft Word and Microsoft Excel and Microsoft Access. Well, that's old school. So now, you know, things like C programming and things like that. So we gave more of a choice in those areas. But, you know, you have to take a couple English classes, you take a math class, you take a science, you're in the humanities. It's giving you that well-rounded education. And we find that those courses are so much more valuable than the students realize. They're caught up in the major courses. And so we've done a good job of splicing them in. So you're going to take a major course even your first semester, but you also are taking a good component of those core classes. And we have a student success center that can help students understand why they're doing it. You know, we're focusing heavily on research. We're focusing on writing. Writing skills are ignored a lot today. So we really have some components of that built into our core classes. So they are articulate, they can communicate, you know, verbal as well as written and things like that.
Now, what type of student would be successful here? What's your ideal applicant? Or what type of student whose parent maybe listening to this podcast who hadn't thought of the University of New Haven should consider applying to the university?
You know, there's so many different things that schools are doing today, but we focus on experiential education. Every college says they have it, but in fact, they really don't. So if somebody is, some of the things we were talking about, 21st century education. So we have a brand new communication set here. If you want to major in communication set at any college, you want to do it. So we have a film production studio, we have a TV and video production, we have a convergent media center, we have a student-run radio station. So that's what I'm talking about. Like, you're actually going to learn by doing. And the core gives you the background, but moving on in the field, I mean, when you're in the criminal justice major, we have an actual crime scene training center. When you're in music industry, music and sound recording, we have actual recording studios and performance rooms and a marching band and a jazz band and an orchestra, all these kind of things. So you're going to learn by doing it. And I think not all colleges focus on that. A lot of our students are prepared to work when they go out for their internship or co-op, whereas many other colleges' students are just learning how to do the job. So I think that that gives us a leg up. I tell them, great core curriculum. It's a liberal arts education with a 21st century kick. That's what I tell them. And our placement rates have been really strong because we have over 100 majors for 4,600 students. So we are able to really do what all the small privates say they can do, give the personal attention. We can do that. Some of our majors, if you're a math major, there's great opportunities in math. People don't realize you can become an actuary now by being a math major or a finance major or something like that. And our students are getting paid really well, getting into data science, things like that. We have a fine arts college, the Lyme Academy College of Fine Arts in Old Lyme, Connecticut. It's part of the University of New Haven since 2013. So a student could combine their interests. It's more like that cross-disciplinary focus. So we have a forensic science student that's taking an honors class that combines forensics with the Lyme Academy College of Fine Arts, and they're talking about art forgery and how do you use forensics to determine if the art is actually forged. Can't do that at most colleges. So we're creating these sub-disciplines that are resume builders for students on an academic basis, and then when they do those experiential activities, it gives them that resume of the hard skills that employers are looking at, not necessarily the specific major, if that makes sense.
Now, you mentioned you're coming up on the centennial. There are a lot of great things happening on the campus. Do you want to talk about, I know, one of the new buildings, the Atwood, that's coming online soon, or any other new facilities that people can look forward to?
Yeah, the Atwood is an off-campus housing option that's really an extension of campus. It's right off of Route 1 here, so if we left this building and walked down the hill, we'd be there in 5 minutes. One thing is in between the main campus and the Atwood. It's CVS, so pretty convenient to be there. But what it's going to be for is students that are still wanting to be part of university housing but not living right on the campus, and it will be for juniors and seniors predominantly. And some transfer students will probably go in there as well. The first phase has 106 beds, so it's a relatively small, but you know, pretty nice units. Several of them just have one-bedroom apartments, so the student can be in with one or two students, depending on what they are choosing to do. And then there are two additional phases that are coming beyond that. So sometime in 2020, there'll be up to 400 beds down there. So it's essentially creating a small college village right off campus, very similar to what the University of Connecticut actually has. And there'll be some retail spaces in the lower level that we'll have ability to use our student cards for. There's going to be a burger bar and a Starbucks and things like that. So different than when I went to school. You got a lot of options. And students from the main campus can just walk down the hill if they want to participate in any of those retail spaces that are down there. We also, in addition to the Marine Sciences Center, we have the funding and a donor, Sam Bergamy, one of our Board of Governors members, donated some money. We're going to have the Bergamy Center for Science, Technology, and Innovation. It's going to be the largest academic building that we've added here since 1970. It'll be about 40,000 square feet, probably opening in 2019. So we have a lot of things that are going on. We have a former nursing home that's next to Notre Dame of West Haven High School that we bought, and they're converting it this summer into a research center for students and faculty to do collaborative research. So it's part of that experiential component. We had a project in false confession identification last semester, which was forensic psychology. So why would someone who committed a crime confess to it if they didn't do it? And how can you determine if they're lying or not? So we have some faculty that are experts in interrogation tactics and also experts in human behavior and psychology and things like that. So doing research on it really gives people a leg up. So did they commit the crime? And did they not commit the crime? And did they lie about it to protect a loved one? Or do they want that notoriety or something? So why? And then what can we do to prevent it? So undergraduate research has been a big component. So that center will be helpful. As we've expanded, we need more facilities. So that new building also allows us to put new science labs in. They just opened a new communication set. We just redid our art, graphic design, and interior design area. We're putting in all kinds of new things this summer. New forensic science labs. Not the crime scene training component, but the actual science labs. They were about 10 to 12 years old. Next fall, they'll be brand new. So we're trying to keep things ahead of the curve for our students. And so, you know, I think there's a lot of people out there that don't realize how strong the University of New Haven is. And the ones that find out, I mean, we're bringing in our biggest class ever. We have absolutely no room here. So a lot of people have found out about it. And hopefully people that are listening may be interested, but if they're not, there's plenty of other great schools out there, and that's why they have to look at the school. They have to find out what is going to be that best fit for them, where they find that they will succeed.
So I just want to calm some of the students down and make sure that you're not utilizing any of those experts in interrogation tactics to do the interview. Sorry.
Absolutely not. Okay. You know, that's a great question, too, though, or a comment. We have so many students that's because our interviews are mandatory for early decision applicants, but they're optional for everyone else. And a lot of our students will do it, but we find that some students won't do it because they're too nervous about it. And the ones who do it are always nervous. And, you know, we're not going to rake you over the coals like, oh, I see on your transcript you got a C minus in geometry. Can you explain that? It's really not about that. We want to find out a little bit more about you. And what can you bring to the table? And are you a good fit? Will you connect here at the University of New Haven? And it also provides the student to ask some questions as well. So we use it as more get to know you kind of thing and get to know us at the same time. I know other schools may have a little more difficult, but an interview could put someone that might be on the fence. Maybe their SAT score is not where they want it to be. Maybe, you know, their GPA is not where they want it to be. But maybe they have an explanation for that. And, you know, we're willing to look at that. So even though I mentioned how important these things are, you know, we don't just automatically deny somebody if they're just below. We want to take a look at it and look at the whole picture and make sure that student understands what he or she is getting into. And will they be successful? And if we think the answer to that is yes, we can admit them to a program.
No, you mentioned you're bringing in your largest class ever. That was it 4,600 students, you said?
The overall student body is about 4,600 right now, yeah.
Do you have goals of increasing your student body? Or
probably not by a lot. I think we'd be more interested in increasing our graduate student enrollment at this point. You know, probably maybe the most we could probably handle, even with these additional facilities, is about 5,000. So the University of Haven is not going to get gigantic. We tell people all the time that it's a relatively small private university, relatively meaning there's schools of 1,000 and 2,000. So it's more, technically speaking, medium-sized. But with over 100 majors, they really are getting that really small personal environment. So we're kind of landlocked here. We've done a lot of expansion of the facilities. I think you've even seen that since the last time you were on campus. And so the president, Dr. Stephen Kaplan, has been instrumental in fundraising and moving the infrastructure of the University of Haven to the forefront. We know how important it is to have the right facilities. So you want to have the right tools in the right setting. And that's kind of what we've done here. And I think it's important for students to take a look at, you know, when you're seeing something being built, it's a good sign. And it also shows that the university takes it seriously. And a bunch of other schools are doing that as well. So sometimes it's a tough thing for people to figure out if you get accepted at 5 or 6 schools. The only thing, and this might be just going slightly off topic, but the advice I give to people all the time, because money always ends up being an important component of it. If you're going to go to a school just because it's cheaper, that's a bad idea. But if it has what you're looking for, then by all means, do it. But we encourage people to really take a look at the financing possibilities. You know, some people come in here and say, oh, I don't want to take any loans. For a private school, unless you're making a really large salary, that might be not a possibility. So we tell people all the time, you know, you take out a loan usually to buy a house and a car. And I tell people you might not ever get the right house or the right car if you don't have the right education. So you really should take that more seriously. We have students all the time that will come here because of our programs and our facilities and our faculty, as opposed to going to a cheaper option, whether it's a state school or a private school that gave them more money. And I just say, hey, go through the process, and you know, you'll find out what fits well with you once you go through that process.
And one thing I always tell families is if you go to a school to save money and the student doesn't graduate, you didn't save any money.
Right.
And so the connection, as you say, the connection and the fit are critical.
We find another issue that people overlook is sometimes they will try to go to a school that might be cheaper, and maybe it's a community college, and then they think they're going to transfer in. But as I mentioned to you earlier, some of our majors, it's hard to transfer into them. And even if you do, you might not have the credits. So you sometimes end up going 3 years here anyway. And so you really didn't save that much money. So I think that you got to look at the whole picture, and you have to look at the major, and you have to talk to the team of transfer enrollment counselors to make sure if you do go to that other school first, are you going to still graduate in the four-year time frame? And if the answer is yes to that, it's okay. Not where you start, where you finish. But some majors are tougher to do that than others. And, you know, some of our majors, like engineering, has a very specific curriculum. Sometimes with the forensic science program, we'll only take transfers now from FEPAC-accredited colleges because the curriculum's the same. If you go to a community college, you could get your science background, but you'll be behind. So we could take you, but you're probably going to take 5 or even possibly 6 years to get your bachelor's anyway, because we're offering different and unique courses that the community college isn't offering. So core is okay, but you got to kind of take a look at those things, I would think.
Great. Now, Kevin, I think you should be congratulated that the University of New Haven brought in their largest class ever this year, and a lot of private schools, small private schools, are struggling. So congratulations to you on that. And then do you have any final advice for families who are looking at colleges? From a parent and from an admissions officer.
Yeah, well, thank you, first of all. It's a lot of work out there, but the University of New Haven is a great option and a lot of great majors, and if you come and visit, you'll find out pretty quickly that we've got a lot of unique things, which is why we have that biggest class, so people have figured it out. As far as the advice, I think what I always think is that too many people listen to too many people. So whether they're looking in a rankings or they're looking at somebody's Facebook page or they're looking at this private website that ranks colleges, I think at the end of the day, if the college is accredited and the college is open for business, they're doing something right. So I think that you got to go to the college that you think has what you're looking for. And whether that comes off a marketing piece or from a social media post or something that you got in the mail, if it piques your interest, go take a look at it, because you might be missing the hidden gem at some point. We get kids from all over the United States now. We've got double figures in freshmen from states like Texas, California, and Florida. And a lot of people would be surprised at that because we're here in Connecticut. But again, we have a lot of unique majors. We're in a great area of the country. Any college that's between Boston and New York can provide a lot of great opportunities for people. There's kids that sometimes choose to go south or to warmer climates for our marine biology program. And the ones that come here are coming from those warmer climates sometimes. And the reason they are, they said, well, we're going to get real marine biology here. If you go to Florida, you're getting basically, for the most part, one season when you go out into the water. So I think you have to look at that. And I think the kids that are looking beyond just that cover of the nice view book, open the book, see what's inside of it. And I think that a lot of times you'd be pleasantly surprised, even if it's not the University of New Haven. There's a lot of colleges out there that do some great things. And I think so many people get caught up in it. I've seen people stressed. There's colleges out there that will accept students, even if they're, you know, lower than they would want to have. So, you know, you can always aspire to the top schools, but remember, everyone else is aspiring to those top schools. So applying to a variety of schools, but keeping it low would be my advice. I'd say I wouldn't apply to more than 7 schools is my personal opinion. Like my daughter's going to apply to 5, so she thinks. And that makes the decision-making process easier. Now, that doesn't mean we didn't visit more than that. You should probably visit, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10. But don't do too much. Do your research first. See what interests you and go visit that. Because I've met so many people, they just start getting confused. They can't remember what one school told them and who has that program and this and that. And I think that that's the problem when you read all these articles about higher ed and the rankings and everything like that. It can inadvertently push people to make a poor decision. So my advice would be do what's best for you. Do your research. And don't listen to anybody but yourself. And I think you'll be a happy person if you do that.
Kevin, thank you very much for your time.
Okay, sure, James. Thanks.